Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
We are in part 16, for those of you who are counting, in my series on liberalism. We're going to pick up where we left off in our study of the interfaith movement and the march towards a new world, a one world religion. We examined the United Religions Initiative as they were back in the 90s, and we're going to continue to look at them as they are now, today, as they're still in business. Last week we also saw that even some Roman Catholic conservatives had concerns about the Pope's connection to the URI, or the United Religions Initiative, and Bishop Swing, who I've talked about in the past. We'll talk a little bit more about him. Because of the liberal ways that Bishop Swing, who's a retired Episcopalian bishop, and Pope Francis's liberal ways and their connection. We talked a little about that in the past. We'll talk a little bit more. And so it goes without saying that not only are conservative Roman Catholics concerned, but even more so, I would say, biblical fundamentalist Christians should be concerned. And I have some articles that I will be speaking, quoting some material from. And first off, an article from the End Begins website, St. Francis, Pope Francis, and the United Religions Initiative Project. And on that site, there's actually a video which tells more about this group, the URI. And in the article, excuse me, which is written by a gentleman by the name of Jerry Ungurian. And this article came out in January 31st in 2015. So it's a little bit older article, but very pertinent, I think. Now, I quote, "The United Religions Initiative Project. There is an organization that we have been hearing more and more about called the United Religions Initiative. Pope Francis has close ties to many members, and especially to its founder, William E. Swing, a former bishop of the Episcopal Church in San Francisco. When Pope Francis was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, he invited Mr. Swing to celebrate the United Religion Initiative's 10th anniversary in Latin America at his cathedral." And this was around 2007. The URI is a United Nations project. It was heralded in June 1995 by Bishop Swing at the occult earth-worshipping interfaith service he was invited to conduct for the UN, honoring the 50th anniversary of the signing of the UN Charter. Attending the service in San Francisco's Episcopal Greats Cathedral were political luminaries and representatives of all religions, including Britain's Princess Margaret, Anglican Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa, Polish President Lech Walesa, UN Secretary General Boutros Ghali, Archbishop Renato Martino, who was the Vatican Nuncio to the UN, and Archbishop John Quinn of San Francisco. The URI is meant to be for religions what the UN is for nations. Its purpose is to be the world religious authority, a UN for religion, in order to foster peace. Delegates to its charter writing summit in 1997 considered they had given birth to a movement as well as a spiritual institution. "Tell the people that there is a United Religions," said Swing. "It will shine the light of the world's spiritual traditions, paganism and occultism included, into a world desperately in need of light. It aims to solve issues of environment, pollution, poverty, and disease whilst building religious unity." Now, this was taken from an interfaith website about Pope Francis that's contained in the body of this article. "Pope Francis's openness to other faiths is part of a trend at the Vatican. A post today on the Wild Hunt noted that on a recent trip to Brazil, Pope Francis met with representatives of Candomblé. The post asked, if the Pope embraces reconciliation with Candomblé, with real human interface between leaders, why shouldn't Catholics also embrace practitioners of voodoo or indigenous religions, or modern paganism, for that matter? That's a good question, isn't it? Indeed, the Pope's new attitude is needed more and more than ever before. We live in a world where human beings fueled by religious beliefs are persecuting and killing one another in increasingly disturbing incidents. What better time for a Pope to emphatically embrace an interfaith mission? Now, I would say at this point, I might quote a pretty important figure by the name of Jesus Christ, the Savior of mankind. Jesus said unto his followers, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes unto the Father but by me." And that's John 14:6. Very important and very basic verse to true understanding of how to find salvation and how to reach God the Father, the creator of the universe, only through Jesus Christ, who is the way, the truth, and the life. Now, I have another article, and it's entitled Bishop's Demonic Vision of a New World Religion. And in it, again, on the topic of biblical Christians' concerns, we have in this article it was written by someone who took the title of Shofar Sound, as in, I suppose, a shofar, like what's blown in Israel. The first thing really that's addressed is the liberalism of Bishop Swing. So in this article on page one, it says, you know, who is Bishop William Swing? And of course, some of this is repetition from earlier studies that we've done, but we just want to explore more about this particular man. Bishop William Swing is the retired bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of California. He was consecrated as the seventh bishop of California at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco on September 29, 1979. He was very active in helping people with HIV, AIDS, and advocating for the elimination of homelessness in the city of San Francisco. Now, I think I may have mentioned before that I took a journey up to San Francisco with the express purpose of visiting Grace Cathedral once upon a time when I lived in the Los Angeles area, because this is one of the bastions of liberalism, as we'll see as we continue to look into Bishop Swing and Grace Cathedral. Now, while I was there, I'll just mention a little bit about my trip up there. I saw a giant quilt that had been placed there, which was representing HIV and AIDS victims. So very much wanting to deal with the homosexual in a positive way. Of course, dealing with HIV and AIDS is something that must be done, of course. But the point is not any talk of repentance from the sin that is one of the most the biggest ways of getting this virus, but a rallying cry around this giant quilt that somebody had put up there to bring attention to this. Now, from an article that I had quoted earlier by Mr. Penn, Lee Penn, and in this article, he says a little bit more along this line. He says, other New Age supporters, and we talked about the New Age involvement of the URI last week, but we want to go into this a little more. Other New Age supporters of the URI include the very Reverend James Parks Morton, and of course this is an older article, formerly the Dean of the Episcopal Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York City. You know, that is sort of the Grace Cathedral of the East Coast, let's say. Again, a big bastion of liberalism. And he's now the president of the Temple of Understanding, or at least he was when this article was written. While at St. John the Divine, Morton said, the language of the sacred earth has got to become mainline. He acted on this belief by holding St. Francis Day communion services that invoked the gods Ra, Asar, and Yemenja. It was from the pulpit of this cathedral in 1979 that James Lovelock first publicly explained the Gaia theory, that the earth as a whole is a living conscious organism. So very, very pagan, the St. John Divine in New York City. It's turned into anything but Christianity. The attraction of New Age leaders to the URI should not be a surprise given the influence of the New Age movement in Bishop Swing's own diocese. Matthew Fox, who we mentioned last week, formerly a Catholic priest, was accepted into the Episcopal priesthood in 1994 by Bishop Swing. Since then, Swing has offered unswerving public support to Fox, allowing rave masses to occur at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco and lending $85,000 of diocese money to help Fox establish the University of Creation Spirituality. Grace Cathedral is also home to Veritatis, if I pronounce that correctly, led by Lauren Artress, an Episcopal priestess and an honorary canon of the cathedral. Veritatis promotes walking through labyrinths as a transformative spiritual experience, way for people to be reminded of our soul assignments, a means for being connected to the divine feminine. Of course, when I was there and I picked up literature, there was a lot said about the labyrinth they had there, etc. And, you know, this particular woman's promotion of the labyrinth has been very influential in other liberal areas. You know, this whole talk that I've been doing, liberalism, the new improved broad road to destruction. And I will get, of course, as I've mentioned before, later into the emerging church and contemplative spirituality. But this labyrinth walking is very much part of contemplative spirituality. And Lauren Artress has had a lot to do to promote this as it's been picked up by these other liberals. now back to the article where I was just, the bishop's demonic vision of a new world religion, and a little bit more about the homosexual, the liberalism, etc. Swing is a supporter of homosexuality. You know, that goes without saying, I guess. His former diocese, California, has a ministry for LGBTs called Oasis California. This ministry allows the LGBT community to be involved in the Episcopal ministry. In a letter, I'm not going to read that letter. I'm not going to take the time for that. But anyway, he also holds a negative view on on true Christian believers that uphold their faith. There's a big surprise, isn't it? Anyway, he believes that these Christians are a threat to world peace. Swing is under the influence of the spirit of Antichrist, this author writes. He opposes the true church of Jesus Christ. Yes, I would say he is under that influence. Swing is against Judeo-Christian values and preaches and teaches a false ecumenical gospel. Now, one more quote from this article I'd like to say, and this is, actually more than one, but concerning the pagan influence of the URI. Interestingly enough, one of the key groups that was involved with the early stages of URI was the Covenant of the Goddess, and we'll refer to that as COG from now on. Which is the world's largest organization for witches. That's right, witches. COG members helped write the URI charter, which states, "We, the people of diverse religions, spiritual expressions, and indigenous traditions throughout the world, hereby establish the URI to promote enduring daily interfaith cooperation, to create culture of peace, justice, and healing for the earth, for all living beings. The URI has brought COG, or neo-pagans, into the mainstream of the cultures and made it acceptable." That's this author's statement. Other neo-pagan groups that support the URI are as follows: Coven of the Stone and the Mirror, Goddess Holding the World Mural Project, Hippo Haven Wiccan Community, Pagan Educational Network, the Pagan Sanctuary Network, and the Serpent Stone Coven in North Carolina. Okay. Now, moving on to, we've looked now at the pagan influence. Now, how about outright spiritistic influence? And this is from page 3 of this article. One of the top members of the URI Global Council is Donald Frew. He is the high priest of Gardnerian Coven in Berkeley, California, and is the national interfaith representative for the Covenant of the Goddess. Frew discussed interfaith gathering with Bishop Swing, in which he states, "A highlight for me was being asked to perform a traditional Wiccan Foundation blessing in closing ceremony. I especially invoke Hakate by name, and the Episcopal bishop was right there raising his arms in invocation with the rest of the circle. We have come a long way." Now, and by the way, I jumped ahead of myself. I was going to talk a little bit about the spiritism. This of course, obviously spirits are involved with this as well. But I was going to talk a little bit more about spiritism a little bit later. I will, as far as direct contacting of spirits, etc. Although that's obviously what this man was doing. It says, "This shows that Swing has totally abandoned the scriptures and he is embracing the Wiccan foundational blessing. It speaks loudly that he is an apostate and a son of Belial." This isn't the first time, and here we go, an Episcopal bishop has dabbled with the occult. Bishop James Pike, during the 1950s, after his son James Pike Jr. committed suicide, participated in a live television occultic seance to have medium communicate with his dead son. Now, let me just say that that's where liberalism can take you, you know. And I'll talk more about Pike when I do my series on spiritism. But look at where liberalism can take you. It's not just, you know, a feel-good, deny a few of the doctrines of the Bible, false religious expression. I mean, it can lead you right into the pit of hell, right into the lap of the wicked one. And the article goes on to say, Swing has carried on Pike's apostate legacy. But Swing has traveled to another level of apostasy with his demonic vision for a one-world church, peace, and the rise of Antichrist. Without a doubt, he is fulfilling Bible prophecy. And the author goes on to, and I may add, with Pope Francis and the Roman Catholic Church now open to cooperating, it's easy to see the possibilities for a one-world religion as this movement continues to take on steam. And one thing let me just mention before I move on about Bishop Pike and his son. I'll be talking a lot more when I do my series on spiritism, but I don't know how far in the future that will be. So let me just say that Bishop Pike was actually being more or less tried by the Episcopals, who were more conservative, believe it or not, at that time, for a lot of his heresies. And at the time of his son's suicide, his son supposedly was communicating with him and encouraging him to continue taking the heretical stances that he was taking. You talk about doctrines of demons and seducing spirits that were impersonating his son. That's exactly what was taking place there. But anyway, getting back to the scriptures now that this gentleman in this article quotes, and I think it's good for us to get some good scripture to read now after dipping into the dark well here, so to speak. 2 Thessalonians 2:3 says, "Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there shall come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition," or the Antichrist. And of course, I just quoted this verse. I didn't realize this verse was right here, but I just quoted it. "Now the Spirit speaks expressly that in latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of demons." And for those of you who listen to this program on a regular basis, I'm sure you're well aware of those scriptures. And you recognize that they do describe the condition in the last days before Christ will return, and which certainly appears to be the times we're living in, for sure. I'm convinced, anyway. But anyway, moving on, and I don't know how far we're going to get in this section, but I had the opportunity to reunite or get reacquainted with an old friend, Cecil Andrews, who heads a ministry called Take Heed Ministries in Belfast, Ireland. And I had the opportunity to go to Belfast, Ireland on several occasions. I got to speak in several churches. And I never met Cecil while I was there, but the man that I was with drove me by Cecil's office, pointed out, "There's, you know, Cecil Andrews. You'd be great if you could meet him." And I couldn't because Cecil was out of town at the time. But I later met him at the Evangelical and Catholics Together conference in Dallas, where he was introduced. And there were many great speakers, including ex-Catholics. Mike Gendron was there. Dave Hunt, of course, was one of the major speakers as well. But I did meet Cecil there. And I kind of reacquainted with him through Facebook. And just recently, actually, while I was preparing this message, he had posted on his timeline on Facebook an article. A friend of his by the name of Sean Wilcock, who is also over in Ireland, and his ministry, which is also primarily to Roman Catholics, as is Cecil, of course, went to the Evangelical Catholics conference. I should say quickly about that, conference was brought together by evangelicals who were against that whole move of trying to unite together as though evangelicals and Catholics really didn't have any real differences. And so Cecil was, of course, very involved with dealing with Roman Catholic, the Catholic faith, as well as other deceptions at this day. But I know and I believe that Sean is probably primarily dealing with the Roman Catholic situation, the Roman Catholic Church deception. And he has apparently a series called Drawing Aside the Purple Curtain, The Papal System Today, An Analysis of the News. And this is the, it was from this series that Cecil posted this article. And this, like I say, where it was, while I was preparing this talk, Cecil had posted this. And I said, well, I ought to check this out. And I'm glad I did, because it is, it's a fascinating article. And the title of the article, again, by Sean Wilcock, it's called Why is Francis, talking about the Pope, encouraging Muslim immigration into Europe? So I'm going to, again, see how far we can get through this article, and then we will move on next week and continue speaking about the URI, the Catholic Church, the interfaith movement, and the coming one world religion. So here's the article. It says, this is something that puzzles many Christians. If the Pope of Rome believes that Roman Catholicism is the only true religion, if he believes that Islam is a false religion, if he is devoted to Europe being Christian, that is Roman Catholic, and if he knows, as of course he does, that Muslim terrorists are bent on turning Europe into Eurabia, a Muslim continent, and that they want to destroy Vatican City State itself and the Roman Catholic influence in Europe, as they certainly do, then why is he encouraging Muslim immigration into Europe, as he has publicly done? What is going on? He says there's plenty of evidence that he is encouraging Muslim immigration into Europe, including that of the hundreds of thousands of Muslims pouring in illegally from their own war-torn countries in the Middle East and elsewhere. He goes on to talk about one of the Pope's trips, and it says at the conclusion of his trip, Francis brought three refugee families back to Rome with him. The Jesuit director of the Vatican's press office said in a statement, the Pope has desired to make a gesture of welcome regarding refugees, accompanying on his plane to Rome three families of refugees from Syria, 12 people in all, including six children. All the members of these families were Muslims. The Vatican said it would take responsibility for maintaining them. This was nothing but a deliberate, well-planned PR exercise, public relations exercise, and of course it went down very well with liberals and leftists everywhere. All right, why then is Francis doing these things? This author states categorically, Francis does not love Islam and does not want an Islamic Europe. Let the reader be quite clear that Francis is not doing this because he truly loves Islam or because he really believes that Romanism and Islam can exist in love and harmony side by side. He does not. Nor is he doing this because he truly believes Islam is a religion of equal validity with Romanism. He does not. Some Christian writers have erred at this point. What then is Rome's purpose behind its promotion of the global interfaith movement? It is true that the Pope would love to be the head of a single world religion, and indeed Rome's interfaith movement hopes that in some way this could become a reality one day. But those working for such a goal know that despite all the nice-sounding interfaith overtures, the only way this could ever really be achieved is by force. The Roman Catholic institution using violence to force the adherents of all other religions of the world to surrender to it. And although Rome has never been averse to using force and physical compulsion to get its way, and all you have to do is look at church history to see that, look at secular history, church history as well. As things stand now in the world, this is not a method as at its disposal. In practical terms, without the use of violence as an unprecedented scale, it is just not going to happen that a single world religion will ever be set up with the Pope at its head, in which all other religions will simply merge with Roman Catholicism, surrendering their own religious distinctives and acknowledging him as their head. The Pope and the Romish hierarchy well know that the world's Muslims, Hindus, Jews, Buddhists, and all the rest are never going to be persuaded by mere dialogue and discussion to just abandon their own centuries-old beliefs and practices and acknowledge a man they consider to be a Christian to be their head. That they would be saying, in effect, we have been wrong for all these centuries. Our religions are false, and the Roman Catholic religion is true. Realistically, this is just not going to happen, or at least it's not going to happen that way, as let's say, but without using violence, which is far more achievable than an eventual single world religion with the Pope at its head, is the establishment of some kind of global interfaith body having oversight of the world's religions and to which all religions belong, and with the Pope at its head, a united religions organization, a kind of United Nations of the world's religions. Such a global interfaith body would be viewed by Rome as a giant leap forward in its desire to control the world. And it's interesting to me that this gentleman, Sean, he didn't actually mention United Religions Initiative by name, but he was describing exactly how they describe themselves, and as a movement that, of course, has come to light. And the Pope Francis having, you know, as we've described, being friends with Bishop Swing, etc. So I find that interesting, and I have to think that this was perhaps in his mind when he was describing what he felt would be more likely to happen, which seems to be happening, you know, at whatever pace it's taking, you know, since the 90s, this United Religions Initiative. But we have seen now that the Catholic Church, rather than rejecting it, has included it as part of its global interfaith body, let's say, or its interfaith movement. Okay, I've got about a minute left. So let's see, I'm going to say, why then, back to the article real quick, why then is he encouraging Muslim immigration by his words and actions? And he describes three possible scenarios for Europe. As Jesuits have done ever since their founding in the 16th century, he is playing a vast game on a global scale and taking a huge gamble as well. In the light of all that has been happening in Europe in recent times, one of three possible scenarios will, in all likelihood, play itself out. The first is that the nations of Israel will be so disrupted by this Islamic flood, they will suffer so much chaos and bloodshed because of it that they will end up begging their governments to act, even though this means the loss of their freedoms and dictatorial control being given to the European governments over their own people. The second is that the peoples of Europe will somehow wake up before it's too late, say enough is enough, rise up and resist this Islamic invasion, for that is what it is, vote out or kick out their liberal leftist governments, turn back the Islamic tide, secure their borders, and stop this multicultural madness that is tearing Europe apart. And the third possible scenario is that rampant, rampaging, violent, out-to-conquer Islam will ultimately, over the next few decades, be victorious over much of Europe. Now, my time is up, but next week we're going to look at the first scenario, and that is the only scenario that we're going to examine as what this author, and I would tend to believe he's probably on the right track, believes. So next week we will continue looking at the URI and One World Religions, as I said before.